Okay, this is Michael O'Rourke with the Oregon Historical Society. The date is September 24th, 1988, and we're continuing the interview with Rick Ralph. This is tape 9, side A, and we were talking about the office, the staff reaction to the revelations when they started coming out in the press, et cetera. How did it affect business on a day-to-day basis? I mean, you were tied up, Jim Tuohy was tied up. What did that mean in terms of what you were doing?
We were totally consumed by it. Totally consumed. And during that period, I mean, the Congress was not in session during a good deal of that period, so there, you know, there wasn't a lot of legislating to be doing and so on anyway. I mean, we had a very heavy schedule under campaign circumstances anyway. So we were trying to run a campaign and had that problem in addition to it. So a lot of the office resources and energy were revolved around campaign activities. I guess a good portion of the office probably wasn't doing much of anything at that point, really, because if they weren't on the campaign payroll, if they couldn't legislate, and we stay pretty busy just answering constituent mail, and you know, a person can use up an hour office with the attention we give to these things, a good portion of their day just answering the mail and the telephone calls and so on. I mean, those things continued as usual, but for a few of us, this was everything.
Mm-hmm. What was the impact on the senator himself?
Very debilitating. It was like a bad dream. It was like a bad dream. I remember walking down the hall once with him, and one of the new items of information, another salvo, had been fired at us. And we were walking out of the office and around the corner, and we both sort of at the same time just stopped, you know, in our tracks. Just sort of, you know, shake our heads, pinch ourselves. Is this really happening? Is this real? Kind of pause. The other hand, as far as the senator was concerned, I mean, you have to be close to the senator. You have to know the senator. I mean, he internalizes everything so much. He's so controlled. And you just knew, if you were close enough, just how severe the impact was on him in terms of what he would say when he spoke to us. I mean, sometimes he'd put it in a religious perspective almost. I mean, he'd say, you know, yeah, whether we win or lose this campaign, I mean, we still win because of what we stand for around here and what we're all about. And so we can't lose. I mean, by certain standards and measurements, the material world, we can lose, but in reality, we can't lose. We can't lose this. And so when he would speak about it, he would often take that kind of tack. He would get angry about the implicating his family in this. And from beginning to end, and I'm sure he still feels today, he was the target. And his family was dragged into this because he was the target. And that would make him mad. In fact, this is a guy, I've been with him for 10 years. I mean, I've never really seen him yell or anything, but to the extent that a Mark Hatfield is capable of raising his voice, it's really not even an accurate description, because he doesn't do it according to the classic interpretation of the phrase raising his voice. But to the extent that that's possible for him, the times I've seen him do it have been, you know, behind closed doors in his office, him and me, maybe him and me and Tui, in regard to this whole thing of implicating his family in this thing. And it really, really set him off.
Do you know Antoinette very well?
Mm-hmm.
What did you see happening with her during all this?
Even more debilitating. It was kind of strange. She didn't read the newspapers and things. You know, she didn't read about it. She deliberately made a choice not to do that, but it was there. And this is a great strain.
How did it affect her career? Or did it?
Well, for a long time, she wasn't active. And I get the impression that she's slowly coming back in, but there was a very long period where there was just, you know, there was nothing. And I think it was always the understanding, too, that he was the politician and she was the bread earner. And there was that kind of separation of roles. And so the implication was, well, you know, it's unfair, but, you know, where a family has to go without the bread earner, you know, as a result of the realities of this political world.
Did, as a result of that change in her her role in the family, did they have to make any adjustments as a result of losing her income, or
I'm really not that up to speed on it, to tell you the truth, in terms of, you know, well, they've scaled down in terms of the size of their home and things like that, but I don't think that was entirely in regard to their financial situation. I think it was just also a lifestyle decision of, you know, ridding themselves of a lot of extraneous stuff. I think I once heard the senator describe it as not wanting to be possessed by possessions, you know, accumulating possessions and filling up the house and, you know, having all this stuff around. It just moved to progressively smaller places. This was underway before this happened. They had moved from the Georgetown house to the Capitol Hill house, and I think that this was a secondary component of that lifestyle adjustment.
What about, I guess this took place during your recess, but what were the, I mean, to the extent that there were people around, how did his colleagues in the Senate react? Were the people that came to his aid, or were there others maybe that tried to take advantage of it?
All of the things I remember were just, you know, very, you know, sympathetic, very sympathetic response, some expressions of outrage, some sympathy. People were very supportive of him.
Anything else to say about the Sackless affair?
No, I probably said too much already.
Okay, well, thank you.